Chapter 5. The Silver Way. Thostos Bladestorm strode along the edge of a valley, Liberator Prime Perrin Goldhammer following him. Tawny dust hazed the vista, but could not conceal the country's strangeness entirely. To begin with, there was its fragmented nature. The hanging valleys of Anvrok was a region of floating landmasses set in an ocean of air. Some, such as this land of Anvrok itself, were as large as continents. Others were only as modest as counties. The smallest grouped in shoals, or were isolated rock, bearing lonely, spiny trees or rough patchings of scrub that hung in tangles over their sides. To the west, a vast crucible floated in the sky, as expansive as an ocean, filled with inexhaustible molten silver. The silver fell from the lip of the crucible in two streams, the Argent Falls. Where one fall hit Anvrok, it became a sluggish river, cutting through the veil of the metal-rich land which defined this country. Even more awesome than the crucible was the serpent, a twisting behemoth whose silver-scaled coils spiraled away, down and down, through the voids of Chamon, seemingly without end. Over the horizon, its vast head gaped, multicolored flames roaring from jaws whited by distance. The beast shimmered in the heat given off by the falls and flames, giving it an elusive quality. It should have been an illusion. The thing was titanic. It could not possibly be alive, but live it did. The soft roar of its fiery breath was a constant in this odd land. The flames stirred hot winds from the air that scoured the valley from end to end. When the sun passed, there would be no true night. Argentine's breath would not allow darkness. Yet this bizarre place had once been populous and wealthy. There were signs of habitation everywhere, all long ruined. A flash from above drew Thostos's attention upwards. A prosecutor wheeled on perfect wings of energy high overhead.
"This way, Lord Celestant!"
The warrior herald pointed towards a slit in the rock. It looked like nothing to Thostos, just a crack. But the crack was an artifice, stone cleverly fashioned to conceal. This fake outcrop masked a shallow valley, into which Thostos and Perrin passed. Much industry had taken place there. Dozens of mine entrances opened in cliff faces that had been created by tools, unnaturally flat-faced and regular. Spoil was heaped in conical piles. No one had disturbed the ground here for many ages. Several of the mines had collapsed. Ancillary buildings stood roofless, their windows empty. The dry air preserved strange machinery, rusted the same colour as the ochre soil. This went on for 5 miles. Thostos followed the prosecutor as he flew to the north. Whole mountains had been cracked and scraped clean of their ore, but despite the staggering scale of the works on show, there were always more natural riches. Thostos and Perrin went from the valley into another, untouched by pick or shovel, where there were the hints of yet more ore veins. Rocks that glittered with argentite, galena, and hematite. In places, nuggets of native copper and gold poked through the dirt, or were strewn on the ground, ready to be picked up. Such wealth was staggering. Thostos supposed it was indicative of the Duodin character that they had chosen to strip each area clean before moving on to the next. Thostos and Perrin went around a brooding mountain of black rock, very different to the others. The prosecutor had stopped and was swooping back and forth, pointing downwards. The Lord Celestant and his aide scrambled down a slope, dislodging a tumble of scree. At the bottom, they found themselves suddenly on an unlikely road, well paved and level. They followed this. Shortly, 2 rows of celestial vindicators came into sight, lining the route, cloaks stirring in the metallic breeze. At the end of the road, Lord Castellant Eldrock of Thostos's own warrior chamber waited at the brink of a cliff. His griffhound, Redbeak, lay at his feet, the eagle-headed beast's tail lashed with impatience.
Eldrock has been no luckier than we, said Perrin. More empty valleys.
This one is more important than most, said Thostos.
There is nothing to kill, growled Perrin. Where is the foe?
There will be killing soon enough, my friend.
Lord Celestant.
Eldrock clashed his right hand against his breastplate and dipped his head. What news of the Duodin?
None, said Thostos.
Their holds and mines are all about this place. Most are despoiled, others appear to have been abandoned. All are deserted. Of the Duodin themselves, there is no sign. The heralds search far and wide for them, but this land is deserted.
I have found the same, said Eldrock.
Naught but dusty valleys and broken towns. No sign of mortal life anywhere, sighed Thostos.
You hoped for better, Lord Celestant?
I hear other realms have fared worse under the yoke of chaos, said Eldrock. Thostos grumbled. I always hope for better, Lord Castellant, but I expect the worst.
I have reports from the Fireblades and the Stormmasters that they have taken the Bright Tor Gate in the face of minimal resistance. You might wish to revise your expectations.
They have at least had the chance to slay, said Perrin.
Well, show me what you have discovered, said Thostos. The rest of our chamber search the northern valleys. There are signs of beast creatures there.
If our brothers come upon the enemy, I wish to be at their side, said Perrin.
Yes, said Eldrock. I wish the same for myself.
If you have found the Silver Way, you will get your vengeance before me, said Perrin.
Maybe, Liberator Prime.
Eldrock took up his halberd and warding lantern from the ground.
Redbeak, come.
Eldrock led Thostos and Perrin to the top of a set of stairs carved into the cliff. A crack followed the stairs, allowing in daylight.
From the outside, this crack appears to be a simple fault in the stone.
The stairway is artfully concealed, said Eldrock. The Duodin were fond of hiding. Most settlements we have approached have grand entrances, but there are many more that are disguised in some way or another.
The folk of Grungni ever were secretive, said Thostos.
Lord Sigmar warned us of that. It would help if they were not.
How are we to bring them to our cause if they cannot be found? I do wonder why we have been given this task, said Eldrock. We, the Sons of Vengeance, grubbing about in the dirt, looking for folk that do not wish to be found. One would think a storm host with a less belligerent character might be better suited. I worry the God King does not trust us.
You question Sigmar already, Lord Castellant?
Asked Perrin.
Well, forgive my impatience.
I feel it too.
I will explain how I see his strategy, said Thostos.
The Duodin respect might at arms as much as they do craft. They bear a grudge a long time, and will not let it lie until they feel they have been fairly recompensed. So who better to approach them than those who place revenge upon the four powers above all other things? Eldrock made a noise of agreement.
We are all untried in battle, we Stormcasts, continued Thostos. If I were Sigmar, I might send my more restrained warriors in first, so I might better judge their virtues, and I might hold back my most ferocious for a time when they were truly needed.
Patience, brothers. We have waited for centuries for battle.
What does a handful more hours matter? We will all get to blood our hammers soon enough. An eternity of war awaits us. It may come to pass that we yearn for peace before long.
Never, said Perrin firmly. I will never yearn for peace again. Not until Khorne himself is cast from his iron throne and his collection of skulls smashed to bone meal.
Aye to that, said Eldrock.
The stairs opened to a level place, floored with sand. A cave, were it not for the gap high above that showed the brazen sky. But the way seemed to end in a cul-de-sac. A wall of rock greeted Thostos.
This is it. Yes, Lord Celestant. Another trick for the eyes. Follow me.
Eldrock approached the rear of the cave, his turquoise armor flashing as he stepped through a slash of sunlight. It appeared he had vanished. Thostos and Perrin stopped in amazement until Eldrock's arm appeared again and beckoned them. What looked like one sheet of stone was two overlapped, with a passage between.
Oh, another marvel made with simple stone, said Perrin.
They followed Eldrock. Another chasm awaited. The convoluted sides matched one another, so it seemed like the stone had parted like a pair of lips. A sandy path wended its way along the bottom, finally opening out in a large bell-shaped chamber. 40 stormcasts guarded the way in. They clashed their hammers on their armor as their officers approached.
Well, let's see it then, said Thostos.
Eldrock pointed to the left. Set into the back wall of the chamber, right into the side of the mountain, was a great portal. Thostos walked to the center of the chamber so that he might see it more fully. The sun was at exactly the right angle to shine through the small light in the roof of the chamber and play across the huge carvings surrounding it. The gate was monumental in size, 300 feet high and 100 across. Two enormous Duodin herms made up the bottom half of each side of the frame. Their heads and backs were bowed with carved effort, long stone beards brushing the sand along the cliff face's foot. They were guarded by friezes of lesser carvings, a row of figures who scowled out at the stormcasts and pointed with accusing hands. Tall, geometrically patterned pillars, carried upon the upturned hands of the herms, made up the remainder of the height, and bore the weight of a long lintel, artfully fashioned from a single massive piece of stone. An outer band, deeply carved with repeating geometric designs, made the outer edge. In the flat space of the middle of the frame ran an unbroken run of 6-foot-tall runes, bordered by perfectly chiselled flora and fauna, thinner against the geometric band and thick around the gaping mouth of the gateway. Thostos had seen none of the things depicted there in the chaos-tainted wasteland of Anvrok. The world the carving showed was long gone. The mountain here was black rock shot through with glittering seams of galena. But the arch was a creamy colour, a different kind of stone. Thostos could see no join to mark the transition between the two sorts. It was as if they had been welded together. Perhaps it had been. The Duodin had skills none could match. The gate runes glowed feebly in the sun of Chamon, lambent with quiet magic that hinted at past power. Thostos removed his helmet. Underneath was a face framed by blonde hair and a beard, square-jawed and heavily featured beyond the norms of mortal men. His eyes alone seemed completely human, and only they had remained unchanged during his remaking. They were the same eyes that had once beheld Amkash in its dying days, but neither his eyes nor the sweat and dirt streaking his skin could hide the god-gifted power crackling within him.
"The fabled Silverway of the Duodin," Thostos pronounced.
With his mask removed, his voice was warm and rich.
"How disappointingly easy to find."
A few of the men chuckled, pride and frustration both in the sound.
"Well, there was no resistance at all. It was just here, waiting for you in the mountainside."
"Retributor Eustace found it," said Eldrock.
He held up a hand to indicate a warrior who bowed his head in recognition.
"A blackbird alighted upon a mountain stone," said Eustace. "I had seen no other life in this place, and so it drew my eyes. When I looked at the bird, the stare was plain to see, though I would swear to Sigmar himself that there was nothing there before."
"Plain for you to see." Thostos took in the clean lines of the carving, unsoftened by time and unmarked by violence. "There is no taste of chaos here at all. Even if the damned had not found it, I would have expected this place to be the lair of a beast. But there is no sign, past or present. It's as if it has been hidden for centuries. It's almost as if we were meant to find it."
"Well, that is what Lord Relictor Criden suggests, in fact, my lord, that the Duodin hid this place from the enemies of their god Grungni," began Eldrock.
"But not from his allies," concluded Thostos. His Sigmarite armor rattled quietly as he walked the length of the gate and back.
There is more, Lord Celestant.
Eldrock nodded to the men guarding the gate. One went to the far side of the chamber. It was so wide it took him a minute to run the distance. Once there, he raised his hammer and tapped at the stone.
Are we to become miners, Eldrock?
Asked Thostos.
Watch, said Eldrock.
He signalled the men by the gate. They placed their hands into the mouth cavities of two of the smaller figures in the frieze. The ground rumbled. A low hum followed. The runes upon the gate burned brightly blue. The rock chamber flickered. One moment, the storm casts were within a giant cavern. The next, they stood upon a platform set into the open mountainside. All around them were stout ruins. Where the far chamber wall had been, a wide road led down from the Silverway, passing over several landings and sweeping flights of stairs as it descended. Then the bare rocky slopes, many hundreds of yards in all directions, wavered and vanished. In their stead, a Duodin town followed the road down the mountain. To the left and right, a vista covering all the Vale of Anvroc was open to the stormcast Eternals. Warm sun basked Thostos's face. The only element that remained unchanged was the hidden path by which he had come to the Silverway. It still came out of the stone by the gate, its entrance dark in the sun.
Now that is impressive, Thostos said, sweeping his gaze over the view. Such art! I have never heard of an illusion so great in scope to hide a whole city, excepting Sigmar's cloak about Azir.
Well, this city is desolate, abandoned like all the rest, said Perrin. Disappointingly so.
You have a point, conceded Thostos. The buildings had been hidden from prying eyes, but unlike the gate, had suffered the effects of time and weather. Many were surrounded by skirts of detritus, cracked by frost and the sun's heat on the walls. Roofs had fallen in. Windows were eyeless holes that the wind blew mournfully through.
If the Duodin intended us to find this, why can we not find them? Asked Eldrock.
The men stared at the gate a moment.
Does it work?
Asked Thostos.
Is the way still open?
Lord Castellant Eldrock raised a hand. A herald of their chamber stepped from the knot of stormcast Eternals at Eldrock's back, his bearing proud, detached, his heavy helmet tucked under one arm. The mechanisms of his wings were folded, the feathers of light extinguished. He announced himself, his voice sonorous and clean and somewhat hollow behind the war mask, like the voices of all the reforged.
Prosecutor Prime Martius the Swift, of the Skyblood Angelus Conclave.
Speak, Martius, said Thostos.
I have returned to Sigmaron upon this road, my lord. It works exactly as our Lord Sigmar said it should. Beyond the arch is a tunnel, fair made and well dressed in stone. As one follows this, the cold of the utter dark gathers about the traveller, until all is black and freezing as the dark before time. Then there is a second arch, like the gate before us, but twice as finely wrought. This entrance here is not the gate, but the path to the Silverway. Blackness and starlight wait beyond. But I trusted the word of our God-King and stepped out into the void, uttering six of the names of Azir as I did so. And lo, a road of silver rose up beneath my feet and stretched on, shining as with the light of the pure moons of Azir. 5 steps I took upon this endless road, finding myself in the gardens of Celerity, nigh to the road leading to Sigmaron. The legends do not speak falsely.
And there was no way back through the realm gate that you exited?
None. It closed behind me without trace. I was taken there and left. I returned by Sigmar's own hand.
And there is nothing untowards upon the road?
It is pure and unsullied. No trace of chaos is marked upon it.
Then the key part of our crusade is concluded, Thostos laughed. In truth, he, Eldrock, and the others of the Bladestorms wished for vengeance before success. Sigmar will see this as a great triumph.
Indeed he does, said Eldrock. A part of the storm host has been ordered to return to Azir.
Thostos raised his eyebrows at his Lord Castellant questioningly.
And? Not us, my lord.
Our own Bladestorm is to remain here, as are the Fireblades and the Doombringers. The Harbingers of Vengeance are to remain on guard upon the Bright Tor Gate, under Lord Castellant Barahan. Others will set out to the west and south, and to Denvrok, to widen the search for the Duodin.
Thostos nodded, visibly relieved.
Oh, that is good. We shall have our vengeance yet.
Maybe, maybe not, my lord, said Perrin.
Thostos looked over the officers and champions of Eldrock's cohort. All of them radiated frustration.
We are all celestial vindicators, he said, raising his voice so that all might hear him. Here by dint of our great desire for vengeance. I see much impatience, a desire to close with the foe and smite him hard, to rend and destroy those foul traitors who turn their backs upon the gods and embrace the impure power of chaos.
His voice boomed from the cliff.
Fear not, my brothers. We shall have vengeance, each and every one of us, over and over again, from now until the close of eternity ushers long night upon the mortal realms and all those that lie beyond them. Do not see the ease with which this gate was found as a disappointment. No, for by this road of the Duodin, our hammers might make their presence felt on 1,000 times 1,000 battlefields. Better we test our mettle later in many wars than in a single one. Do not despair, O celestial vindicators. We shall have the blood of 10,000 enemies in recompense for the lives of our families and the destruction of our nations.
Well said, my lord, said Eldrock.
You do not appear satisfied, Lord Castellant.
I yearn to fight, admitted Eldrock.
Thostos clapped his hand upon the arm of his lieutenant.
As do I, Eldrock. As do I.
Others will have their chance sooner than we, I think, said Eldrock. I have the orders for the Bladestorms. I can guess their content.
A scroll was brought out by Eldrock's aide. Thostos read it quickly. When he was done, he rolled it up again, whereupon it burst into flames and went to nothing.
We are to stay and guard the gate.
Eldrock nodded.
Of course.
I understand your desire to go out and fight, Lord Castellant.
Thostos looked upward to the pale sky, as if he might see Sigmar up there, staring back down at him.
This task of holding the Silverway, I would entrust to none other but you, Eldrock, he said. You are among the finest of all Lord Castellants, a master of defensive warfare.
Nevertheless, I do not know whether to be angry or relieved, said Eldrock. The others will be sent on to realms where battle rages already.
He rested his lantern upon the sand and gripped his halberd tightly.
Their chance at vengeance comes before ours.
Or our fellows still present here might find nothing, and those sent home find themselves in reserve in the Golden City, said Thostos.
You don't believe that, I think, Lord Celestant.
No,
snorted Thostos.
Not really, but I also do not believe this ease will hold. This land appears empty, but has long been under the dominion of the Master Schemer. There are beastmen, and others will come once tidings of our arrival spread. Our presence will have been noted. Can the process of concealment be reversed?
Oh, yes, Lord Celestant.
Eldrock's voice was heavy with disappointment. He raised his arm, and his warriors moved back to the gate's guardian statues.
Stay your hand, Lord Castellant, said Thostos. Let us leave the Silverway open to view. Let it be a signal to the forces of chaos that not all the works of the ancients were cast down, and that we come in open war to reclaim them. We are not skulking whelps. Let them see this and rage. The enemy will come against us soon enough. Of that I have no doubt.
The posture of the celestial vindicators around the gate changed. They stood taller. Whispers passed among them, urgent with the anticipation of battle.
"And then I await them with eagerness in my heart," said Eldrock. "I thank you, my lord."